today, I want to start off with a bulletin that CISA put out yesterday that's near and dear to my heart, and I am going to liken this to why the security onion is nothing more than vendor snake oil. In case you want to follow along, I will drop the link down in the show notes. This is the CISA alert AA22-137A as in Apple, not Mac, just Apple. And this has to do with weak security controls and practices routinely exploited for initial access. Now, going through this, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 areas that CISA has outlined as being abused for initial access by most bad guys, ransomware operators, and other versions of scum of the earth. So, with that said, let's kick it off with the mother of all screw-ups, and that is MFA. How many applications do you have right now that do not require MFA? Worse, how many applications do you have that don't even have MFA as a part of the login cycle? In this day and age, I really don't think any one of us should be using an application that does not have MFA. And if they want to charge you more for it, pay the price if you need the product. Yes, that is my unsolicited, not so expert analysis advice. MFA is one of the easiest ways to stop hackers in their tracks. And I say that because most of us reuse passwords. I do. I am not perfect. I am far from it. But I have a really easy password that I use because it's easy for me to guess. But I only use that password when I have MFA. And I'm talking about a TOTP, not SMS, not email-based. There's a email protection platform, this is a side note, that uses email-based MFA. The dumbest thing I have ever seen in my life. I digress. Back to multi-factor authentication not being enforced. You should have this on any of your remote desktop access. You can have it on your servers, your Windows logins. Have it everywhere, especially your email and most definitely your banking. I came across someone who had their corporate bank account hacked because someone went to a cell phone provider, got a new phone with that person's SIM card, with that person's phone number on their SIM card, authenticated into online banking, and popped out with 250 large. What could have stopped this? Seriously, people. Multi-factor authentication. And there's a reason why CISA is putting this as the first one on their list. Next on the list is incorrectly applied privileges or permissions and errors with access control lists. This is PAM, which is privileged account management. And understandably, as we all move to the snake oil, that is zero trust. And it's not that I don't believe in zero trust. I don't believe in vendors' implementation of said zero trust because they are asking you to implicitly trust them with your data, even though it is zero trust. And for those watching, I hope you see the air quotes. And if you're not, well, there's air quotes going up. There are a lot of different applications out there for dealing with your PAM, and I suggest you look into them. If you are in the Microsoft ecosystem, it is handled pretty well within Microsoft 365. What you want to do as a part of this is have a way to automatically rotate your passwords. There are a lot of good companies out there that will tie into your IDP, rotate passwords as needed. And my problem there is I don't like where they put the passwords. In the MSP world, which is the greatest set of IT providers ever made who crowdsource everything, they drop it into IT Glue or Hoodoo, which is a third-party application. I'm not a fan of that. Any type of PAM product should first and foremost be zero knowledge, zero trust, and drop it straight into your password manager. Because you should not have multiple versions of your passwords floating around in third-party applications. What happens if your vendor is breached and their backups are... Your PAM goes right out the window. But again, I digress. And I'm going to do that a few times because I am really passionate about how much I dislike the security onion. Next up is software is not up to date. This is as bad as no MFA being deployed, in my point of view. And hear me out on this, okay? I have come across many IT providers who will use an RMM, remote management and monitoring tool, which is a fancy way of saying they charge you a lot of money to maintain your systems and do nothing else. But in this one case, when you're doing software updates, you need to look at your firmware. You need to look at drivers. You need to look at OS. You need to look at third-party applications. Don't get stuck on the notion of a provider telling you, hey, we're not going to do your drivers because we don't want something to break. That's their problem. They should be testing that. They should have a lab. If you don't have an exterior provider, internally, you should have budget to create a lab environment that replicates your production environment where you can test these patches. I've said it once and I've said it 1,000 times. I would much rather brick than have that machine subjected to ransomware, a breach, or any version of the bad guys getting in. All too often, providers say, no, we don't do drivers. We do them every month. We do them every quarter. Well, you know what? Look at the rate of RCEs and 0 days coming about these days. It's at a faster velocity than they've ever been. So I implore you, please go ahead and update everything. Worst case, wait a day or two. Test it in your lab environment. But there's no reason why you should be going more than 3 to 4 days without rolling these updates out. And if you are, you have a really bad CISO or person in charge of your IT systems. But hey, what do I know? Next up on the list is use of vendor-supplied default configuration or default login usernames and passwords. Oh man, there's a large provider out there nationwide, and they use the same admin. Let me back up a little bit. They use the same Windows Active Directory username across all of their clients from California, go all the way to the East Coast. And I know that, well, add in piece here. They also do a different password from the Windows Directory or Azure AD. However, that Azure AD password is the same for all of their clients all over the continental US and perhaps internationally if they operate. And I know this because I had a buddy, well, I have a buddy who is out in California, uses this company as their managed services provider. And I said, hey, we just took over a client. Password hygiene is really poor from this provider. Can you go to your higher ups and see if you can use this to log into those accounts to see if you have admin access? Did the same thing with a buddy here in New Jersey and another one in Boston. Same thing. Gave them the passwords, said, hey, see if you can log into your systems because you all have the same provider and gain administrative rights. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? All three of these gentlemen were able to log in with administrative credentials without MFA, specifically on Microsoft 365 Azure AD. So don't just blame the vendors you're buying products from. Verify what your IT providers are doing and what your internal IT providers are doing. There is a reason why there's a default configuration for everything that you buy. And that is because that is the lowest common denominator that works for as many people as possible. Even Microsoft makes you go in and flip on security defaults because they know not everyone will do it and they don't want to own that risk. So Brian Weiss is usually on here. And he loves talking about the first pillar of NIST, which is identification. I implore anyone who's listening, viewing, hearing this by carrier pigeon, you know, however you consume, more power to you. Do a real asset inventory of everything in your ecosystem and go through it. Make sure there, use Google. This is the one time I'm going to say, use Google. Go ahead and make sure that you find the default credentials for any of these products and try hammering your systems with them. And if you get glory, go change. At least you'll be one less person that is insecure due to the previous setup by someone else. Next on my list, next on CISA's list is remote services such as virtual private network lack sufficient controls to prevent unauthorized access. Everyone disagrees with me on this. Why in this day and age are you still using a VPN into your system? That is the, well, my opinion, not that it counts, but hey, my podcast, I get to say what I want, right? That is one of the dumbest things to use in this day and age is a VPN. If you're in 365, publish it as an app into Azure, even though it's on-prem. Let Azure proxy that connection for you. Why are you using a VPN client for your firewall that has more 0 days than Swiss cheese has holes? Come on, think about this, people. We had Pulse Secure VPN last year. Huge issue across its customer base. SonicWall has had a tremendous number of patches and updates for RCEs in their firewalls and VPN software. Same thing for Sophos. They're all the same. No firewall is better than any other. Well, except Unify. That's just consumer grade. Come on, let's be honest. If you have a provider putting Unify into your environment, ooh, back to VPNs. This is what you got to do. Shut them off. People will bitch. People will complain. But why are you not publishing your apps through Azure proxy gateways? Next on the list, strong password policies are not implemented. This is where I think CISA and I might have a little bit of disagreement. I don't care about password strength if I have real MFA. Real MFA for me is duo push notification, or if you're watching on video, I'm talking about a duo bio key. Yes, bio key. Why In this day and age, are you using a security key that is not using your biometrics? Anyone can take that key and they can access your multi-factor. And if you have weak passwords, too bad, you're lost. But as for strong passwords, I really don't care. Do what you wish here, with my caveat being if you have hardened MFA. Next on the list, cloud services are unprotected. Okay, what are they saying here? Misconfigured cloud services are common targets for cyber actors, yada, yada, yada. Poor configurations can allow for sensitive data theft and even cryptojacking. Okay, this goes back to the use of vendor-supplied configurations and default logins, blah, 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 from 2 or 3 points ago. Here's the thing. All of these misconfigurations, all of these unprotected cloud services are usually put into production with their default settings. And again, those default settings do nothing more than lower the bar for the lowest common denominator to hit the highest number of people to buy this product. If you are not doing onboarding with any one of your, you are doing not only a disservice to you, but your company, your employees, and your customers, because no one can operate a business these days without owning data, or let me phrase this, having data in their possession and care that has personally identifiable information. It is your job, it is your responsibility, it is your duty, for God's sake, to protect this stuff. So stop using default configurations. Pay the money, have an expert come in and do it for you. Open ports and misconfigured services are exposed to the interwebs. Okay. Okay. RDP, ransomware deployment protocol, otherwise known as remote desktop. Okay. Port 3389 has been the vector of attack for a vast majority of incidents. There is no reason in this day and age why you are not proxying your RDP through some type of gateway that is authenticating with multi-factor authentication. Again, unless you are in a highly secure environment where the data you're dealing with deems it necessary, such as maybe DoD, anything that CGIS is supposed to take care of, maybe you should block all of these ports. And for the love of God, do not open LDAP up to the internet. Do not open SMB, any version, to the internet. And for those geniuses out there that are giving printers live IP addresses for cloud printing, let's not do that. That's a bad idea. Next on our list is failure to detect or block phishing attempts. I don't know of any email gateway that is 100%, 90%, or even 80% effective at anything they claim it doing. And that is just the crux of the matter. I've used IronScales. I have used Avanan. I have used Datto Bitdam, which is now Datto some name. I don't care. Whatever. Those are API-based. They're in the mailbox. And their job is to scan the email once it gets in from your gateway. I can tell you I am now moving over to Area 1, which if I wanted can be at the gateway level, as well as API in the mailbox. And all of these platforms let something through. So my take on this is invest in the time to teach your people what to look for in an email. Do not use, in my opinion, not that you ask, but since you're listening, I'll give it. Do not use any of these fish simulation platforms where you have to whitelist a domain, okay? Because your email system should be catching poorly configured emails from poorly configured email systems. And I don't have the faith that company ABC, who's selling phishing, is going to renew their domains when they have to, and a bad guy's not going to get it and send emails in to your whitelisted system. Instead, take the opportunity to educate your users. The biggest thing you can teach your users, if you don't know the sender, don't click on anything. If you're not expecting anything from someone, don't click on anything. In terms of email, block macros, block images. This is on you as the resident expert, or in my case, I'm the resident idiot, to block these basics. Do not let them permeate throughout your organizations. Set these standards higher. It's okay if your users complain. It means it's working. I'd rather an exception to a rule than being the rule. I know that kind of doesn't make sense because I'm talking about not whitelisting. You get what I'm talking about, right? Okay. Next on the list is poor endpoint detection and response. Now, this is where we really get into some good snake oil, okay? First of all, you should have a well-known, reputable, multinational corporation antivirus product on your system. Don't use any of this niche backwater bullshit. it's just not going to be good enough. Okay. Secondly, if you are going to have an EDR on your systems, make sure someone is going through the copious amounts of logs that are going to be generated. Otherwise, you're just spending money for no reason. And when you go to make a claim and you tell your insurance company, hey, we have EDR, and they said, well, what were the indicators of compromise? And you say, I don't know. You're going to get fucked. So probably don't use an EDR unless you have a capable security team going through the logs and doing the threat hunt. Now, that's it for this portion of, not the podcast, of CISA's alert. Now we're going to get up to their mitigations, one of which is to adopt a zero trust security model. And they're saying that eliminates implicit trust in any one element, node, service, yada, yada, yada. Okay, here's the issue. Zero trust is an idea. It's not a product. So any product that tells you they are zero trust, first ask if they can see your data, because then they're not zero knowledge. Ask them what they're doing with your data. How is it backed up? Where is it put? Go down that rabbit hole with them, and you'll realize very quickly they can't even answer your question. When it comes to zero trust, here's what I think. Limit your administrators. Limit how your administrators can interact with the environment, and bring stuff back home. Host it locally if you can. If you can put it behind Azure as a proxy, okay? If not, rely on major platforms and have it secured properly, which is what we just went through. Next thing on this list is limit the ability of a local administrator account. Okay, I'm a fan of this, but again, it goes back to what I just said about zero trust. And same thing for the next one, which is control who has access to your data and your services. So here's the thing. If you have proper hygiene in your environment, using MFA, using PAM, you're tracking where your data goes, all of this is moot. Okay. Make sure access to each user is tailored for that. You don't give them any more resources than they actually need. And for the love of God, do not use default passwords for anything, MFA or not. Okay. One of the things I would say that you should really focus on more than most others is your offboarding process. Make sure if you are not using an SSO platform, proxy logins through with the single IDP, make sure you have an inventory how these people are interacting with logins, because when you shit can someone or they leave or whatever the case may be, make sure they can't get into your systems, because they may not be vindictive. They may not be malicious to come back in, but if it's weak hygiene, someone else may be able to abuse it. Okay. What else is it saying? Harden conditional access policies. Okay. I know geo-blocking is a cool tool and technique these days. Yeah. Geo-block everything. If they're coming in from Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, block it all. But guess where a lot of bad actors are coming in from? The Netherlands. Guess where a lot of American vendors are hosting their data and their applications in Azure? Out of the Netherlands, because it's cheap. Control access into your systems. Otherwise, what the hell are you doing? Credential hardening. Okay, that's MFA. Great. Now, here's a piece of snake oil I really enjoy, and that is establish centralized log management. I'm all for logging. I think all things should be logged, but what are you doing with these logs? That's the first thing to understand. Do you have a team to threat hunt? Secondly, what is the time delay from a log being created, ingested, and parsed to, as other people would say, can be actionable? Don't use fly-by-night companies for this. Figure out a company that's using reputable vendors and resources. Excuse me. Otherwise, what are you doing? You're just going to piss money down the drain. Antivirus programs. Yes, we know. God damn it. Microsoft Defender comes with antivirus. Or, sorry, Microsoft Windows comes with Defender antivirus. We get this. What are you doing with the tools? That is often more important than the actual tool itself. Okay? And I could go through the rest of this, but I think we covered it pretty well earlier by going through the basics that are often ignored. Have a plan in place. Should something go wrong, what is your incident response plan? What does that look like? And if you guys don't have one and you're interested in getting one, reach out to me. I have one that I've been putting together. I'll at least get you a checklist for free that you can use to start building your own. And with that, I'm done for the day. So you made it this far. Like, subscribe, share, and I will see you on the next one. Thank you.